This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The director of the White House's Domestic Policy Council under President Obama, Melody Barnes, will speak tonight at Western Michigan University. Coming up, I'll talk with Barnes about the promise of democracy and the lack of trust in American institutions. But first, Fred Upton was first elected to Congress in 1986, although the district lines have changed a couple of times since then. The Republican has been representing some part of Southwest Michigan in the U.S. House. In November, voters will decide if Upton will serve another 2 years in Congress. Fred Upton, thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure.
What would you like to do if you have another term, 2 more years in the House?
Well, there's a whole laundry list of things, but first of all, I would note that last year I joined a group, a newly formed caucus called Problem Solvers, and it's a bipartisan. We have an equal number of Republicans and Democrats, 4 from Michigan, in fact, and I'd say that most of America has been upset, not happy, with dysfunction in Washington on a host of fronts. And so we've sat down over the last number of months, and we know that we're going to have a new speaker. Paul Ryan is not running for re-election again. Most pundits out there suggest that we're going to have a close margin of control, either the Democrats by a handful or Republicans by a handful. So we're going to have a new speaker. We don't know who he or she will be, but our group has begun to sit down now with the prospects for the new speaker on both sides of the aisle, and we've let it be known that the rules have to change. We want to govern the way that, frankly, I learned back in ninth grade civics, and that is we're going to take the best ideas on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. We're going to insist that they be considered and debated and voted on, and we'll let the chips fall where they may versus being denied the opportunity to offer a bipartisan solution that, in fact, may end up being in law. And this would apply to tax bills, would apply to spending bills. An issue that we really got involved in was immigration reform. I know that there's a bipartisan solution to a problem that needs to be fixed, and our bipartisan plan that I frankly, again, think the president could have signed was denied from being offered on the House floor. That's got to change. And so our insistence of these new changes for the next speaker are going to be pretty bold. And we're planning to introduce that in terms of a resolution, a formal bill, in essence, next week.
Well, let's start there with immigration, since that's the issue that you specifically brought up there. If we're just talking about Fred Upton's vote, how much is enforcement important? How much is security of borders a part of
that? That has to be an element. So security of our borders needs to be part of the equation.
Does it have to be a wall?
Maybe for parts of the border, a wall might work. But there are other techniques, other things that you can use. I don't think a multi-thousand mile wall is the right approach to take, pretty expensive as well. But border security needs to be part of the equation. But we also know, let's face it, our immigration system today is broken. It's broken for the folks that are here. It's broken for the employers that try to hire these folks as well. This season, again, we're in Southwest Michigan, we're leaving millions of dollars of unpicked fruit and vegetables because they didn't have the workforce that's there. You read about stories about folks who come here to get educated. They come with a student visa, and all of a sudden they have employment opportunities that are pretty good. And guess what? Legally, they may not be able to stay. We want those jobs here. You know, we're going to be seeing great things happen in the next number of months and years here in Kalamazoo. Pfizer, an international company, Stryker, an international company, Whirlpool, an international company, Thermo Fisher, an international company. They want to be here. They want to expand here. And because of, you know, the laws of the way that they are, they've actually had to see some of these folks be sent overseas and expand over there. Let's figure out a system that works. Border security needs to be a piece of it. And those folks that are here that today are undocumented, yeah, we need to figure this out. If they want to become a citizen, there's a process for them to go through. But let's also fix the situation for the Dreamers here on campus. I've met with a good number of them over the last couple of years, actually. Many of them now are married. They've got families. They've got jobs. Maybe they came at age 4 or 5 here. They've been here for maybe as long as 15 or 20 years. This is their country.
Do you think that someone who came here illegally, even if maybe they did so intentionally at the outset, should still have an opportunity somewhere down the road to earn citizenship in the United States?
I do. There ought to be a process for that. I mean, obviously a background check to make sure they're not a member of like MS-13 or a criminal felony record. But we know that there are probably as many as 11 or 12 million folks like that. We're not going to send people home to, you know, wherever, whether it be Central America or Poland, as we saw with the case that was well documented here in Kalamazoo earlier this year. That's not going to happen. So let's figure this out. Let's figure out a way for them to be here with legal status. There's a process for them to go through, and we ought to be doing that.
The tax cut bill, which was signed into law, you penned with some other representatives from Michigan an op-ed for the Detroit News, and you said the tax reform is working. Who is it working for? Because there are some reports of wages going up, but there's also some reports that inflation's starting to creep up, and that's eating into that gain that people should be getting in their wages.
Well, actually, I saw a report just this last week. Inflation went down last month, but you know, yesterday I spoke to the Portage Rotary, and the point was made that Pfizer, our largest employer in Southwest Michigan, is expanding to the tune of about $600 million, half a billion dollars, a new expansion. They're adding 400-some jobs. The average wage with benefits is over $90,000. That's coming because of the tax cut bill, the middle-class tax bill that the president signed a year ago. I can remember well that we used to have growth rates in the under 1% GDP. For the last 2 quarters, it's been over 4%, and the prediction is, again, for this next quarter, it's going to be over 4%. We saw a lot of businesses in our district and, frankly, around the country that gave bonuses, increased wages, and there was a report last week that I believe that the average middle-class income raise because of the middle-class tax cut was about $3,200 for a family of four earning $50,000, $60,000 because of the tax cut as it impacted them.
There are projections of a $1 trillion deficit for next year, and the Congressional Budget Office says that there is some revenue which is not coming in because of the tax cut. Is the tax cut worth what we may experience in terms of a growing deficit?
Well, a couple things. We knew that the deficit would go up because of the tax bill. I said at the time, almost 2 years ago now, that I thought that a growth rate that could be over the 2% projected, in essence it's 4% or better, is a very positive step in the right direction. As you look at the spending and revenues actually collected are at a record high, even though the tax cut came into play, spending is up. And frankly, there are some things that no one really accounted for. The hurricanes of last year were more than cost the taxpayers more than $100 billion that was unexpected. I don't know what the bill is going to be for Hurricane Florence. As we talk today, the flood waters are still rising. It has a terrible impact on the state of North Carolina. I've talked to a number of my colleagues from there, and the damage is just terrible. And we know some of the ramifications. You know, North Carolina is known for a lot of things, including agriculture. And so chickens and pork, those operations are shut down. Millions of chickens were killed, so we can expect prices to go up, eggs, I mean, all of that different things as you think about the future. And we're going to have to help those citizens out. I don't know what the bill is going to be, but that's an unexpected cost. But at the same time, I would note, earlier this year, I supported a bipartisan package that the president signed on spending for both fiscal year 18 and 19. For the first time, in essence, we passed a two-year budget. It passed, I want to say it was 3-1. Both of our senators voted for it as well. Most of the Michigan congressional delegation on both sides voted for it. And as a consequence, we're not expected to have a shutdown. We can remember those in the past because there was an agreement on what's called discretionary spending. So the money for defense and education and agriculture, I mean, in essence, it was pre-agreed to last February, and the appropriators, as they send these bills to the House and Senate floor in the next couple of weeks as we get to the close of the fiscal year, September 30th, they're within those caps.
One of the issues that the Democrats are hitting you hard on is the health care bill. If that health care bill that you had voted for and passed the House had become law, what would that have meant for people with, say, pre-existing conditions? There was an opt-out for states under that bill that would have allowed them to not have that requirement, correct?
Yeah, a couple things. So let's, as we reflect back on Obamacare, the way that it came about, there were a lot of promises of what was going to happen, that you could keep your health care plan if you liked it, that premiums were going to come down, everyone was going to be covered. And it's now been a good number of years. Not every, you know, we still have millions of folks that are not covered. In Michigan, more than 100,000 folks, in fact, lost their health care plan. Premiums have gone up double digits some years. They didn't go down at all. I had a couple lines in the sand as we debated this. And of course, as we know, the Senate didn't pass it, so it didn't happen. But a couple lines in the sand that I had were, one, for states like Michigan, 26 at the time, there's I think another one or two since then, we expanded Medicaid coverage. And I wanted to protect those people. And we worked that into the bill that passed the House. I think that if we had ended up getting a bill through the Senate, that those protections would have been made whole again. I wasn't worried about that. But also in the bill, we made it very clear that those with pre-existing illnesses, in fact, would be covered. Now, there was a provision that was added later that allowed a state, if they chose to drop pre-existing illnesses as part of their basic package. Michigan was not going to be one of those, but if another state did, that would be a real problem, particularly for someone like me who supports those with pre-existing illnesses not to be charged more, not to be excluded from coverage. So I was successful in getting a number of colleagues to support with me an amendment that would have provided billions of dollars for high-risk pools for those states that might have dropped that coverage. That amendment was added to the bill. Again, I think that had the Senate passed a bill, that we could have made it even stronger, but I felt that it would have adequately protected those with pre-existing illnesses. And of course, as it turned out, no legislation moved forward because it didn't pass in the Senate.
After he lost the Republican primary for governor this year, Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly said the reality is that this is President Trump's Republican Party now. Do you agree with that, and are you comfortable with that as you run for reelection?
Well, you will remember, I'm sure it's in your notes, you know, in 2016, we chose, as we said, to stay in our lane. I did not make an endorsement even after the convention for president. I just said, we're going to stay in our own lane. We're going to work on our own race. And I have not been, you know, in my almost 2 years now since the president has taken office, I've not been afraid to oppose him on whatever issue I thought was important. And I've got, you know, whether it be Charlottesville, whether it be Great Lakes funding, you'll remember his budget zeroed that out. We restored it 100%. Whether it be the Paris, getting out of the Paris Treaty, cutting children's health, cutting food stamps, I've not been afraid to speak out and vote against when I thought he was wrong, as I've done other Republican presidents as well. So Brian Kelly had a tough race. We know that in primaries, yeah, the president's got a pretty big stick. He endorsed pretty heartily Bill Schuette, which was not unexpected, I gotta say. He endorsed John James in the Senate race. John James won his primary as well against Sandy Pensler. And I'd say among the base, and the polls show this too, yeah, the president's pretty popular. Does it work so well in November? We'll see.
Republican Congressman Fred Upton is running for re-election in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. As always, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Gordon.